arise. Oy, 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 all persons having business before the Honorable United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims, draw an eye and give your attention, for this court is now in session. God save the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Good morning, I'm Judge Castle. To my right is Judge Hagel. To my left is Judge Lance. As a preliminary matter, counsel to the clerk will move the court for the admission of an applicant to the bar of the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Perry.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Kerry Sklar, counsel to the clerk of the court. And this morning it is my pleasure to move the admission to the bar of this court of Ms. Laura Eskenazi. Ms. Eskenazi is a member of the bar of the state of Maryland, and I am satisfied that Ms. Eskenazi meets all the qualifications and standards for admission to the bar of this court. I therefore move her admission.
The motion is granted. The clerk will swear her in.
Ms. Eskenazi, if you please come up here. Raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear or affirm that you will conduct yourself as an attorney and counselor of law before this court uprightly and according to the rules of this court, and that you will support and defend the Constitution of the United States?
I do.
Thank you very much. Ms. Eskenazi, the court welcomes you to the bar. We understand you're also a member of the Rules Advisory Committee, and we thank you for serving in that capacity.
Thank you.
Thank you again. We're here today in the matter of Diaries versus Peak. It's got a docket number of 051468. Counsel for both parties, please note your appearance for the record.
Michael A. Leonard for Mrs. Francis Darris.
Thank you. Next
Mr.
time,
Mr. Leonard,
please.
When you address the court, you're welcome to stand.
Sorry, Your Honor. Michael A. Leonard for Mrs. Francis Darris.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Leslie Rogal for the Secretary of Veterans Affairs. With me is Joan Moriarty, Deputy Assistant General Counsel of the Office of General Counsel.
Thank you very much. Are both parties ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes, Your Honor.
Each party will have 30 minutes to present their respective arguments. Mr. Leonard, do you wish to reserve a portion of the time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes.
The clerk will note it. You may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. Widgets. It's all about widgets. The only difference between a remand from the BVA to the AMC or an RO to obtain a medical opinion and a letter to a medical center director for a medical opinion under Section 20.901 is its format. Substantively, they are identical. To understand this, one needs to understand how VA management thinks. Having spent 28 years with VA management, I think I am uniquely qualified to address this. VA managers do not think in terms of individual claims. They think in terms of widgets.
Are you putting your testimony in the record here?
I'm sorry?
Are you putting your testimony into the record?
My testimony, Your Honor? My argument, I am.
Well, base it on the record.
I'm sorry?
Base your argument on the record.
Well, I'm going to base this argument on the law, Your Honor.
Base it on the law, but not your personal knowledge of how you think VA works internally.
Okay.
Unless you can substantiate in the record or a regulation or a statute.
Well, all right, Your Honor. My point is that the board uses the format it does because of the way it counts end products.
Well, why don't we just assume for going forward that it is the same? Why don't we just accept your position going forward? We'll come back to it. So the board issues a remand order and says they prefer a doctor of this specialty. And the head of the department decides that the better doctor to respond to that is of a different specialty. Do you believe that's a Stigall violation?
Yes, I do, Your Honor. There is no distinction, really, substantively, between a request under Section 20.901.
No, I've already given you that part for now. We'll come back to that. The question is, assuming it has the equivalency of a board remand order, and the board asked for a doctor in specialty A, but when it got to the department head determined that another doctor of specialty B would respond to it, and that doctor did respond to it and answered the questions, and the board proceeded, is there a Stegall violation?
Yes, there is, Your Honor. Stegall stands for the principle that the board is required to ensure compliance with its instructions for an opinion request. And in this case, it did not do that. It requested the opinion.
Do you have
opinion.
Any case law that supports your proposition that when the board asks for a specific doctor, that the head of the VA department in charge of assigning the doctor could not assign a different doctor and that the board couldn't rely on that?
The medical center director or the chief of staff can assign anyone he wants within the specialty that's requested, but it's for the board to request that specialty.
And what case law do you have supporting that, or regulation or statute?
Well, VHA Directive 2000-049, I think, supports that. It's clear from the language of paragraph 4A2 that the BVA is responsible for determining the medical specialty required. Quote, the BVA will select the VA Medical Center with the appropriate medical expertise. And I think also the Federal Register excerpt that was submitted as additional authority by the Secretary's Council also supports this position. While in paragraph 5 of that, it states that the ultimate selection of the physician asked to render the opinion is left to the hospital chief of staff, it's clear from its context that it only means that the individual selected, not the specialty required, is determined by the chief of staff. In fact, in some VA medical centers, the chief of staff is not even a medical doctor. Earlier in the publication, in paragraph 2, it cites this court's opinion in Perry versus Brown for the proposition that, quote, the board may seek to obtain development itself through a VHA or IME opinion, or through a remand to the RO, or to obtain an IME opinion, or to provide for a VA examination of the veteran. Thus, Perry and this portion from the Federal Register equate a remand request with a VHA or IME request from the board. So, in accordance with the court's decision in Stegall, the board's decision in this case should be vacated and the claim remanded because the VA physician rendered an opinion upon which the board relied was a neurologist and not an internist, as the board had specified. And he apparently did not review the entire claims file, which the board had requested.
Well, if you assume that he reviewed the entire claims file and we focus simply on the issue of whether or not the board asked for a internist and was given a neurologist, it's your view, based on the cites you just gave us, that that is a Stegall violation?
Yes, it is, Your
so
Honor.
So if that came back to the board, would the board have to remand it? There is no substantial compliance. They couldn't go ahead and take the response from the neurologist and see if it answered their questions and proceed?
No, Your Honor. I think what the board needed to do was to go back to the medical center director and say, this is not acceptable. We requested an opinion of an internist because, well, it doesn't matter why, but in this case it's because there were various symptoms that needed to be considered, not just neurological ones, but and also they needed the doctor to specify that he reviewed the claims file, which he did not hear.
Counselor, under Stegall, aren't we dealing with a superior tribunal ordering an inferior tribunal to do or not to do something? And in this instance, we don't have that set up, do we?
I don't agree with that, Your Honor. Actually, the BVA does not have authority to order another department of the VA to do anything. Just as the Veterans Health Administration is a co-equal branch of the VA, so is the Veterans Benefits Administration. The board can only ask the AMC or the RO to do something. If there's a dispute, the matter goes to the Secretary of Veterans Affairs to resolve, as he's over both of them.
All right, all right. Given your logic and what you just said, then how does Stigall come into play?
Well, Stigall requires that an opinion or that any instructions of the board for further development be carried out in accordance with those instructions, and there.
That's this court talking to the board, right?
This court has told the board that it needs to do that. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And then you want to carry that one step further and apply that precedent to the board downline to the VA.
It's not me who did that, Your Honor. It's the court that's done that in Stigall. You know, this court decided that the board is required to ensure compliance with its instructions when it requests additional development. I certainly agree with that principle.
On a separate topic, Counselor, there's an appeal pending of your client to the Federal Circuit at present. Isn't that correct?
Yes, there is, Your Honor.
And the decision of the Federal Circuit recently involving the Rodriguez decision may have impact on your client's appeal at the Federal Circuit. Isn't that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And the Federal Circuit may very well either remand to this court or do something else that may have impact on this case. Would you agree with that?
It may have an impact on the final resolution of the issue, of the ultimate issue in this case, but this is a separate appeal. Now, it was the board that decided to bifurcate this case. Originally, it went up on appeal from the regional office, and the board decided that it would consider the hypothetical entitlement issue in a separate decision from the service connection for cause of death issue. And so it split it into two decisions. And this course has jurisdiction to review each of those decisions. This court reviewed the decision in the hypothetical line of this case and vacated the board's decision and remanded it. It did not hold that it lacked jurisdiction because it wasn't a final decision. So that's the law of the case at this point.
Well, I'm just curious as to how the federal circuit's handling of this case may have impact, or maybe not, on this particular claim. My concern, of course, is judicial economy. We have two appeals pending at the same time at two different levels. But go ahead.
Well, I would certainly agree with your Honor that they should have been handled as a single appeal at the board. But the board decided to split them, and at this point, I think we're pretty much stuck with that.
I know this is a question that wasn't briefed, but in light of Judge Lance's question, does our decision in Roebuck, if you're familiar with that decision, have any application here?
I'm not familiar with it, Your Honor.
Okay. Roebuck arose in a slightly different context and dealt with the timeliness of the filing of a notice of appeal when a case was bifurcated, a claim for a single disability, and the board bifurcated two theories, and we found that it was a single claim and that a notice of appeal could be filed here after the second decision was decided by the board and both theories could be argued. Do you recall it now?
Yeah, it sounds familiar, Your Honor. Didn't the court hold that it didn't have jurisdiction over the first decision because it didn't resolve the entire appeal?
I think it was that we had jurisdiction over the entire claim. The VA argued we did not have jurisdiction because the claim was decided in the first decision, and that the board had no authority to decide the second decision. I haven't quite frankly thought about it, to be honest with you. And Judge Lance's questions just raised that thought in my mind. I'm not sure that we If you're prepared to address it now, fine. I'm not sure that we need to, but we'll obviously discuss it. If we need additional illumination, we'll ask for it.
Be happy to file a supplementary memorandum, Your Honor.
I'd like to go back just for a minute to this Stigall issue. If upon receipt of the medical opinion from a neurologist instead of an internist, the board had received that, could the board have decided that it was sufficient, written a statement of reasons or basis why it accepted that? Or is it stuck entirely forever in cement on an order that it previously gave?
Well, I think I can't cite any specific cases, but I think I can recall that there have been some cases where what might have been considered a Stigall violation was considered not to be because the issue, you know, the board explained why it was okay, and the board's reasoning made sense, and it wasn't that vital to the opinion that it be the way the board had asked for.
It's vital to the case, but taking that on down, you were counsel below, were you not?
Were you counsel at the board? No.
Did you raise the argument to the board that they had a neurologist instead of an internist?
Yes, I did, Your Honor. That's in the record.
Can you point that out?
I think it's at 284. No, I'm sorry, that's not 284. It's at 291. It is appellant's position that the medical opinion from Dr. Quinn is flawed in three respects. And in the first respect.
First respect.
I'm sorry, it's the claims for the second respect. No, I'm sorry. No, it isn't. Okay. At that point, we didn't know for sure what his credentials were, I think, was the problem. So I raised the issue of what his credentials were.
You did. You asked for the CV.
Right.
They didn't give it to you.
Well, Your Honor, actually, I did eventually get it from VA. I appealed that determination, and the general counsel held that I was entitled to it.
Did you have it before the board decision?
No, I didn't. They provided it a month after the board's decision.
So as the board proceeded, you had asked them for it, and they told you no?
That's correct.
All right.
Time of the decision.
And so you're saying because you didn't have the CV, you didn't know that this was a neurologist instead of an internist?
You couldn't be sure from the opinion was
Did
from the neurology
any?
Department, but we didn't know for sure whether this doctor may have also been an internist.
Is there anywhere in this letter where you asked for a CV where you made the implication or said, gee, this could be a neurologist instead of an internist?
I don't think at that point I had made that.
And why wouldn't you bring that to the board to let them correct the record down below?
Well, at that point, I think we're already at the court.
Well, this letter is before that, isn't it? I mean, it's in the record, so it obviously is before the board.
Right.
In fact, the other reference that you gave me just before this, 280-something, is your original request for the CV, is it not? 288?
Yes, I think it is.
So you clearly are looking for the CV, but I don't see in here where you're concerned that it's a neurologist versus a internist being raised.
Well, again, I needed to find out the doctor's credentials before I could be
okay,
sure.
Okay, so your view is because you didn't have it, even though it came from the neurology department, you couldn't make the argument below.
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, is that...
Events overtook.
Does that argument appear in your brief anywhere?
That the opinion was from the wrong specialty?
No. That the reason that you couldn't determine was because the VA failed to provide you in a timely fashion the curriculum vitae of the physician that conducted
it. No, Your Honor. I didn't raise that issue in my brief. At that point, they had provided it. So, you know, if they had not provided it, I would have raised the issue in my brief. But the, you know, the curriculum vitae just confirmed what was on the face of the decision, of the opinion.
That the individual was a neurologist?
Right.
And not an internal medicine specialist?
Yes, Your Honor.
But doesn't that mean you could have raised it? I mean, you don't have the CV, but you know he's a neurologist and not an internal specialist. And here's an issue that you're raising to the court for the first time that I thought you just told Judge Hagel it was on clear on its face that it was a neurologist.
It appeared to be.
Okay, yeah. Can you explain at all why you didn't raise that to the board?
Basically, things overtook me. The decision from the board came out first. And
before what?
Before I obtained that information from the VA.
No, before you got the CV.
Yes, sir. Before
okay,
I got
so
the CV.
Okay, so the opinion on its face, you just said, was a neurologist. You had a suspicion, at least, that it was a neurologist. I'm just...
Well, it was from a Department of Neurology. So
all right, I'm done.
In hindsight, you know, it's always easy to say you should have done this or that, but I think I raised the issue sufficiently by questioning the doctor's credentials when I asked for the curriculum vitae, and it wasn't provided.
Well, just sitting here, it seems to me the whole record going through is you're asking for the CV. You wanted to compare him against your doctor because you wanted to argue weight of these particular doctors, and I think there's some support in that in your other arguments. And it didn't pop into your head until later on that this guy was a neurologist and not an internist, and now all of a sudden it becomes a problem and you want to argue Stigall. I'm just telling you how it hits me.
Well, I wouldn't characterize it that way myself, Your Honor. You know,
I think I picked that up.
I would like to make one point, though. I've heard the term thrown out here about the board issuing a remand order. Actually, in the law, there really is no such thing as a remand order at the board. What the board issues to the regional office or the AMC is referenced by VA adjudicators as a remand decision, even though no decision is actually made. And this goes back to my argument about the widgets and that's why they do that, because they need to count it. So they do it in the format of a decision, even though there's no decision. But it does not contain any order. And in fact, if you look in this case, there is a remand order in the record at 258. And you'll see that there is no place where the board says it's ordering anything or anything entitled an order like there is in a final decision.
Could I ask you a question about that distinction that you make? In a remand decision, as you've termed it, does a copy of that decision go to the appellant or the claimant at that point?
Yes, it does.
Does a copy of the letter that we're discussing right now routinely go to the claimant?
No, there's a slightly different procedure. The VA sends the claimant a letter and says, we're going to request an expert medical opinion, or in this case, they said, or multiple opinions. And, you know, they do inform the claimant of what they're doing, but they don't do it by a copy.
So is the absent somebody with a knowledge of the system, who knows to request a copy of the letter, then the claimant does not see the question that's asked or the specialty that's sought to give the examination in the letter context, which we have here. But if it is in the decision format, they would see that. Is that correct, as I understand you? I mean, I'm not sure.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
But they are entitled to get a copy of the letter.
If they ask for it.
Right. Yes, Your Honor.
Can I just follow up on your reference to 258, 259?
Mm-hmm.
I guess what you meant is it doesn't use the word ordered anywhere because it reads remand, and this matter is remanded to the RO for completion of the following, and then it lists out various things. So,
that's correct.
But that's not an order in your view, is that it?
No, Your Honor. The term order appears many times in 38 CFR parts 19 and 20, but the term remand order does not appear anywhere in 38 USC or 38 CFR. Section 19.7B, for instance, states that the board is required to include an order in its final decisions, quote, granting or denying the benefit or benefits sought on appeal or dismissing the appeal, but it puts no order in its remand decisions. Other places, the board's regulations provide authority for the chairman or his designee to issue orders granting motions by claimants for reconsideration or advancement on the docket or reducing attorney's fees, but not a remand order. In fact, Section 19.8 specifically refers to, quote, the board's decision, remand, or order, and, quote, written decisions, remands, or orders, making it clear that the three terms are intended to be separate and distinct. A BVA remand is not an order. And as I said, the BVA really doesn't have the authority to order a regional office to do anything, any more than it has authority to order a VA medical center director to do anything.
Other than the court has said that the board will ensure compliance with its orders, including remand orders.
Well, yeah, the term remand order seems to have first arisen in VA, BVA parlance in one of the first cases in this court, Erspammer versus Derwinski, in which Judge Farley used that term. It's been popularized, of course, by the Stigall decision and its prodigy, but there really is no such thing in the law as a BVA remand order.
Be it from me to say that if Judge Farley wrote Erspammer.
Counselor,
you got your point.
You got about 47 seconds to tell us about your theory of beyond about the necessity, if you will, to instruct on the reasonable doubt and equipoise and that type of thing, which is raised, and tell me why the court's decision in Gilbert doesn't preclude that type of argument.
Well, the board's opinion request violates the requirements recognized by this court and the Federal Circuit for fundamental fairness in adjudicating claims for veterans' benefits. In its request and the record at 281, the board asked the VA physician for an opinion as to whether the veteran's service-connected disabilities caused or contributed.
All right, your time is up, but I will defer to Judge Lanz if he wants further information.
Just conclude your sentence, if you would, please.
Okay. Basically, what I'm saying, Your Honor, is that if they're going to give the legal criteria to the doctor, fundamental fairness requires that they also inform him of the legal criteria that's favorable to the veteran, that he's entitled to the benefit of the doubt. They shouldn't have given any legal criteria to the physician. That's for the board to do, and I agree completely with the secretary's counsel that they're not required to give the benefit of the doubt criteria to the doctor. I'm only saying that if they're going to give legal criteria to the doctor, they need to give him all the relevant legal criteria.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
As this court knows, the decision in Stigall v. West was a landmark decision at its time, and even to this day it continues to have a significant effect in the adjudication of claims. The Stigall court addressed a pervasive problem that was existent at that time, that the board was not ensuring compliance with its remand orders and also ensuring compliance with this court's remand orders. In the Stigall case, the facts were that the court had remanded the case and the board had then remanded the case in order to obtain two specific VA examinations, one in neurology and one in psychiatry. That case was remanded to the RO for that development. The RO then obtained one of those exams, but didn't obtain the other. The one exam it did obtain was inadequate. When the case came back to this court was rightfully frustrated by the fact that the board failed to ensure compliance with the development that it had ordered itself.
Well, what is the difference between the board saying, get me this neurologist, and the board putting in a remand order, get me this neurologist?
Your Honor, it depends on how the board asks for it. In this case, if you use the example, they asked for a neurologist in this case, or an internal medicine doctor, it was asking for not necessarily the opinion of a neurologist, but it was asking for an answer to a question, as opposed to if it had...
Well, let's go one level up. What is the difference between the board and a remand order, as you've termed it and Judge Farley has created, as saying, give me an opinion from an internist, and then the difference between that and the whatever you want to call it here under 7901, give me an internist.
If we're just asking for a run-of-the-mill request for an opinion to develop evidence in a case.
No. You're missing the point.
Well, I guess, Your Honor, I'm trying to differentiate the two.
First off, I'm trying to figure out what's the difference between the orders. Now, the order could say, just get me an opinion, and then we can decide what that means, or it could be a request from the board, get me an opinion. Question is, what's the difference between the order in a remand order format under 188 or whatever format we just looked at, and some other format from the board? What is the difference?
Well, an order, Your Honor, requires compliance. In this case, there was no order, so really what was sought here was actually the best answer to the question, which necessarily wasn't strict compliance with the specialty, but the compliance was an answer to the question presented.
So what if the board had asked for the board in a remand order had said, give me an opinion from an internist? And the head of the department looked at that and said, you know, those guys aren't doctors. They don't know what they're talking about. The guy who can really opine on this is a neurologist. And so they send back a neurologist. They didn't go back to the board. They didn't ask for clarification. They didn't say, can you do this, et cetera. They just gave an opinion with a neurologist.
Well, what could happen in that case, Your Honor, would be, number one, it could be substantial compliance. Also, if the board or the RO accepts that as an adequate opinion, then it's ratified that and accepted that
okay.
It answers the question.
Accept that for now. Now go to the other type of format that was given from the board. The board went out with the same exact stuff, except it's not in the format of a remand order. What's the difference?
The difference in the case here, Your Honor, is that the authority that the board used to obtain that opinion has built into it the fact that the specialist will be chosen by VHA. That's implicit. And that's actually explicit in the authority.
But wouldn't that be the same if it came? One more. Wouldn't that be the same if it came in a board remand order that said we would like to have a 7109 doctor, specifically a neurologist, internist, to go ahead and give this opinion? Would that be the board remand order, or would that be the authority under 7109?
The board remand. If the board could remand it, and of course ask for the neurologist, but if it's done pursuant to 7109, it's at that point the medical expertise will be used to choose the specialist. If the board finds that that does not answer the question or is not adequate, then of course the board is free to say this is not adequate and doesn't answer what we required of you.
Thank you, Judge.
I'm hoping that answers your question, Your Honor.
No, I still don't understand the difference between the board going out and saying do this and the board putting on a piece of paper that might be called a remand order and saying do this.
But I think, Your Honor,
I think Judge Hagel had a question. So.
Yeah. If I can, if you'll permit me a little more time, Your Honor, maybe if I can track better and answer it. This is merely a request because of the unique nature of the complicated medical situation, the expertise level required. And it's envisioned that under 7109, it is a complex question. And the board might not even have the expertise to determine who the appropriate specialist is. That is why an opinion is requested pursuant to 7109 as opposed to, say, under 5103A or D. And there's a difference. The board would not request an opinion pursuant to 7109 or 20.901A in just the routine case that didn't involve any medical complexity. And I think that's the distinction here. This is a case of medical complexity that required an expert. And it required such expertise that the board may not even be able to identify the proper expert. Versus in most situations when the board actually remands for an examination, it is very clear cut what the appropriate specialist would be. But this again, because of the complexity, required guidance from VHA in order to direct the board to the appropriate expertise. And the reason that the board even indicates a specialist in this case, the board asks for internal medicine, and that's done for purposes of trying to get it to the right VHA facility. That's why a specialist is indicated. It's not for strict compliance, it's not even for substantial compliance, but it's more as an administrative tool so that the right facility gets the question, especially if it is one of a subspecialty, and they can balance the resources and make sure that the right answer is provided. But it's left up to the chief of staff to determine which physician and which specialty is going to provide the best answer to that question.
Point me to the authority that supports your statement.
Your Honor, if we look to the language of 38 CFR 20.901 little a, that language actually says the board may request an opinion from, and I quote, an appropriate healthcare professional.
Okay.
That is an issue of medical expertise when requesting an expert medical opinion. An appropriate healthcare professional is best left at the VHA. Yes, Your Honor.
Where does that appear in 20.901, that last statement?
Well, I was, Your Honor, I was going to, the supplemental authority that the Secretary furnished to the court.
So in what you've stated, all it says is that the board can select the appropriate medical authority, correct? That's what the regulation says.
Your Honor, the board may request an opinion from an appropriate.
Okay.
Medical. And I think the interpretation, Your Honor, that the Secretary has is
I'm asking for you to show me in the language. You made an assertion about what the regulation requires. You're giving your argument. Now, I'm asking what your support is. You pointed me to 20.901. Nowhere, unless you can tell me differently, from what I heard in 20.901, does it say that the VHA selects the specialty. What it says is that the board requests the appropriate specialty. Now, am I right so far?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, now go ahead.
And if also this court does look to the 7109, the statute as well, in Part B, there is discussion that when rendering such...
What is the language?
I can get the exact language for you, Your Honor. In 7109, and in little b, the Secretary shall make such necessary arrangements... and I skip forward for the advisory medical opinions, and it leaves it, and I'll quote directly, that the actual selection of the expert or experts to give the advisory opinion in an individual case shall be made by an appropriate official of such institution.
Okay.
I further add, Your Honor, that for the supplemental authority that was filed last week,
all right,
there was significant concern by members of the...
Just point me to the language.
I believe I'll quote the comments, Your Honor. The concerns were that the change in the regulation allowing the chief of staff to make the determination of specialty was, arbitrary and unfair to claimants because the board members are not in the position to know either what expertise exists in VHA or who the best expert is for a particular question. The comments further, and I quote, stated that the selection of a physician qualified to render a medical opinion is a process that should be overseen by VHA management. In response, the department stated in the Federal Register, quote, the ultimate selection of the physician asked to render the opinion is left to the office of the chief of staff at that facility. And the response further stated that the selection of the physician is a process that is in fact overseen by VHA management.
I still don't see how that selection of the physician, as appellants argue, is equivalent to selection of the appropriate expert. Where the board designates a specific expertise, let me put it this way. Let me ask you this question. Who has the ultimate authority to decide the claim itself? The final appeal by the Secretary, who has the authority to decide that final appeal?
The board will decide.
And the board, in order to make that determination, they base it upon evidence in the record.
correct? And in this case, it seems to me that the board decided that they needed additional medical evidence, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
So they needed it in the form of a medical opinion. So isn't it within the capacity, authority, and responsibility of the board to define the box of the or the scope of that opinion and who they want to give it? Because they're looking at the entire claims file here. So when they say, I want an internal medicine specialist, why isn't that something with it peculiarly within the board's fact-finding responsibility?
Your Honor, the matter within the board's fact-finding responsibility was the answer to the question that was posed. And I add,
okay.
Your Honor.
Now, where do you tell me why you say that? Show me where in the record that is.
If we look at the engagement letter, I mean, that specifically requests an answer to a question.
Okay.
Now, Your Honor.
Let's look at the language of the engagement letter.
Yes, Your Honor. And I'm looking at the particular question that posed that the veteran's service-connected disabilities, which included chronic brain syndrome associated with brain trauma with post-traumatic headaches and or the loss of bone of the skull, cause or contribute to the death of a veteran. With that request in that letter was the authority found in the VHA Directive 2000-049.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, Your Honor, it did ask that an internal medicine specialist provide the opinion, if that's the language you're looking at, Your Honor.
Right.
And as the Secretary has taken the position, which is supported by the development of the current form of the regulation, VHA had the medical discretion to determine who could answer that question most appropriately.
Well, let me ask you this. Why isn't the appropriate way to deal with this if the board, who again, I think you will tell me if I'm saying something you don't agree with now. The board, who has the ultimate responsibility to determine facts and to decide what facts it needs to make an ultimate determination on the appeal, says, look, I think I need the opinion of an internal medicine specialist. And it goes out, and by the way, as I recall, as it appears in that regulation, the board has in front of it, given to it by the VHA, a list of all of the hospitals and what expertises are at each hospital, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
So they select the medical facility and say, oh, okay, I see Portland here. Looks like they've got an internal medicine guy. I want this to go, I'm sending this letter to Portland and give me an internal medicine specialist. Now it gets out to the chief of the hospital, the medical director of the hospital, and he says, you know what, I'm looking at this question. I think this is better answered by a neurologist. Why doesn't he send a letter back to the board and say, hey, you asked for an internal medicine specialist, I think it would be better than a neurologist give this opinion and see what the board member says, A, or B, give the examination requested and give an examination of a neurologist because that, in their medical judgment, they believe that that would help decide the claim. Why wouldn't that be the appropriate procedure?
Your Honor, the procedure that you discuss is not contained in the VHA directive. The VHA directive charges the chief of staff with the responsibility of making sure the opinion's obtained.
No. Well, excuse me. Show me in the directive where it says that. I think it says it's responsible for selecting the physician, just as argued by the appellant. I think the appellant's argument has... I would like to hear you address the appellant's argument. I'm just looking at the words there, and the system, the way it's designed, is trying to marry up the expertises and recognizing the independence of these two branches, trying to figure out how they mesh together. And the way I see that system is, you know, they have to cooperate with each other.
That's correct, Your Honor. In fact,
but I don't see anywhere in the directive that it says that the VHA determines what evidence is necessary for the board to make a decision on the claim. When remember, the board has in front of it the entire claims file.
the VHA director, when he receives this, the medical director of the hospital, all he has is this letter with a question.
Your Honor,
how is he in a better position to determine what is needed to decide that claim than the board member who has the responsibility under the law to decide it, number one, and number two, has all of the other evidence in the file to make that decision?
Well, Your Honor, the Chief of Staff does have everything that was sent, which includes not only the request, the specific question, but also has the claims file. And I believe the Chief of Staff is the best person to make the decision based on the question presented and the evidence that is before him or her in order to determine who is required to answer this question of medical complexity that has been posed. I think a Chief of Staff, a medical doctor, is much more situated to make the determination than a board member who is an attorney and who's not a trained medical person.
Could I state your argument this way, that you interpret the word choose the physician to mean choose the specialty?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So does that sum up your argument?
I think the language of 20.901A, where it says appropriate health care professional, is important, and also the background of that regulation to understand the Secretary's position that we believe it is a VA management decision as opposed to a decision by a board member.
I understand that. Now let me ask you another question. You apparently would differentiate between the letter request and the request in what has been referred to as a remand decision. In a remand decision, if this same language appeared in a remand decision, would that be enforceable under Stegall?
Your Honor, it would require substantial compliance at least.
Okay. So you're saying that the letter, because of the way it came in a letter, that mm-hmm. it doesn't require substantial compliance?
Correct, Your Honor.
Even though, who was the request letter signed by?
The personnel from the board, Your Honor.
Read the signature name and title, 281.
Your Honor, this is Kimberly Osborne and an acting veterans law judge.
And who is the author of the decision in this case, the board decision?
The same individual, Your Honor. And Ms.
So
Osborne.
How is it the letter any different than a remand decision other than the form? And in addition, as a routine matter, the claimant doesn't even get a copy of what's being asked for in the letter format, but does get a copy in the remand decision. So, but for the fact that they have a well-qualified attorney that knows how to ask for that, to raise this issue, depending on how we decide it, of course, doesn't that give the VA, if we would not find it to be require compliance, doesn't that give the VA the opportunity to not disclose the question asked? I know it lets them know that there's an opinion being asked, but it's a little different.
And Your Honor, I think that's important that that the board carefully terms the letter that's sent to the appellant and lets them know that an opinion is being requested as opposed to any particular expertise, because again, it's expected that if a more appropriate specialist is determined better qualified to answer the question, then in fact it might not be the specialist that's posed in the engagement letter. And I think that's actually careful wording by the board when they send these letters to the appellants, so that there is not an expectation that in fact a particular specialist will provide the opinion if a better specialist is determined to answer it. In fact, and I also add that Ms. Osborne, the veterans law judge, if she had not felt that VHA opinion did not adequately address her question or it was otherwise inadequate, she did not have to accept that opinion and then issue a board decision.
That was my question. My distinguished colleague over here indicated that maybe somebody pick up the phone and say, hey, you requested an internist. We think a neurologist probably would be better, or put that communication in writing. But the other option is the one that I think you just outlined, whereas the Kimberly Osborne, I believe it is, gets the opinion back and said, this is not what I asked for. Do it again. Would the VA be under an obligation to do it again?
Your Honor, I don't see anything that would ever preclude that from happening.
If she wasn't satisfied with what she got back pursuant to her order or decision, she could have remedied the situation.
Yes, Your Honor, but in fact, the judge in this case ratified that opinion by accepting it. But there's certainly nothing that prevents multiple VHA opinions from being obtained if they're necessary or do not provide an adequate response to the question of medical complexity that is presented.
What's your view with regard to whether the appellant who was represented by counsel raised this issue to the board or not?
Your Honor, I know the Robinson case came out last week, and that does allow the court to consider representation by counsel below as a significant factor in whether the court
will
hear.
What's your view as to whether or not he did raise it or not? You heard his position.
Your Honor, he did raise in general the adequacy of the examination, but did not raise the specialty. And I would leave it to the court's discretion to consider it as a factor in its decision. And it was not briefed by the secretary, so I don't think we're going to go forward and ask for something we didn't ask at the time of briefing, but I do say the court should consider it.
Now what is it that you don't think you raised?
I believe, Your Honor, our brief did not ask the court, indicate that that was discretionary for the court to review because it had not been presented to the board. But he had generally raised the adequacy of that opinion that was obtained.
I'm sorry, what was not presented to
We did not address specifically whether or not the neurology.
You're talking about since he didn't present to the board the question of whether or not the adequacy of the exam based upon the particular medical specialty that rendered the exam, but he did raise it here for the first time.
Correct, Your Honor.
And you did respond to that.
Okay. Right. Yes, Your Honor. If there are no further questions, Your Honor, I ask.
I think there are no further questions.
Well,
thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Leonard, you have 5 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I have a question that you didn't was briefed by both parties, but I want to make sure that see if we can dispose of it. You made a timing notice error argument, and it was responded to, in my view, fairly effectively by the secretary. Are you still pursuing this timing error issue?
Well, Your Honor, we're not dropping the issue. I don't consider it one of our main issues, and I didn't want to spend a lot of time talking about it. But
the secretary says, "Hey, of course they didn't provide notice because they before the first." The initial adjudication in this case, because the VCA wasn't passed. But guess what? Later on, they did provide the notice. Now, didn't they? Isn't that compliance under Pellegrini?
Well, except that the board didn't base its determination that there was compliance or lack of prejudice on Pellegrini. And under Chenery, the court cannot substitute its own reason for the board's reasoning.
Ms. Derry's got notice?
She got a notice. How adequate it was is something else.
Well, you didn't argue adequacy. You argued timing, correct?
I really don't want to spend a lot of time on it. I would agree, Your Honor, this is not a major issue in the case. I would not completely waive it at this point.
Okay.
I'd stand by my brief. I would like to point out that any arguments made on the basis of 38 U.S.C. 7109 are not applicable to the request in this case. 7109 does not provide for medical expert opinions from the VA. It specifically provides for independent medical expert opinions from outside of the VA.
Didn't the Federal Circuit already rule on that? Didn't this court rule on that in Padgett? Didn't they rule the opposite?
I'm not aware that they ruled that it did, Your Honor. By its clear language, it doesn't. 20.901 is clearly the authority for the medical expert opinions. Um, The Secretary's counsel also argued that the Chief of Staff at the VA hospital has the expertise to determine the specialty, whereas the board member might not. Well, there's nothing in the record to substantiate that. Again, this is anecdotal, and it's not, you know.
Let's assume.
I know that.
Let's assume that there's error here. Okay. Let's assume that we find that this letter required compliance, and should have gotten an opinion from an internal medicine specialist, but it got a determination from a neurologist. Given the fact that the board member reviewed the opinion, given the fact the opinion was very thorough, let's assume that they had the claims file before the examiner. How is Ms. Derry's prejudiced?
Well, Your Honor, you could say the same thing.
Quote, wrong doctor.
In this case, there were a panoply of symptoms that the board was interested in having a doctor, a more generalist, an internist, review. But again, I don't think the reasoning of the board for requiring an internal medicine specialist is, you know, our guessing at it is all that relevant. Fact of the matter is they requested it from an internal medical specialist, and they didn't get that. And as far as, you know, the questions you asked at the beginning, Your Honor, the same reasoning can be applied to any Stigall case. The board gets back something different than they asked for, and they accept it and go ahead and make a decision. I don't see how that's any different, whether it's in the format of a remand decision or in the format of a letter to a medical center director.
Except, Counselor, let's talk about this last remedial issue, and that is Kimberly Osborne got back the opinion of Dr. Quinn, I believe it was, neurologist, says that's not what I asked for, but maybe I was mistaken. Maybe this is the opinion that we really need to decide this case fairly and equitably. Do you have any evidence that she objected to having an opinion by a neurologist submitted to base her opinion on, her decision on?
She didn't object, Your Honor. That's the problem.
So she ratified it.
Under Stigall, she should have objected, because the claimant has a right to enforcement.
Your time is up, but I will defer if you would like more.
No.
The case will be submitted. We will agree, counsel.
All rise. This honorable court is adjourned to further order.